A deadly weekend of Russian attacks as the U.S. vows to continue sending weapons to Ukraine.
And you'll see a steady flow of U.S. assistance to Ukraine week after week.
Plus, a controversial mobilization law goes into effect in Ukraine that could boost Kyiv's troop size.
According to the data available on Monday, more than 300,000 men have already updated their personal information through this online service.
And later in the program, a Ukrainian boxer's victory gives the country a much-needed boost.
For me and my country, it's a big opportunity.
Today is Monday, May 20th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Lori London. A day of mourning in Ukraine's Kharkiv region Monday following a weekend of deadly Russian attacks. Moscow's renewed offensive in Ukraine's war-ravaged northeast is adding significant pressure on Kyiv's outnumbered and outgunned forces. Joining us now for an update is Anna Chernikova in Kyiv.
Sounds like there was some very serious attacks over the weekend. What can you tell us?
It was a very tough weekend for Kharkiv and Kharkiv region. The city of Kharkiv is under constant shelling, as it was for the past couple of months. Unfortunately, there are more attacks across the area and across the region. Over the weekend, it was a really bad shelling of the recreation area in one of the villages in the Kharkiv region and also the surroundings. And at this point, we know that at least 11 people were killed, including a woman who was 7 months pregnant. Also, at least 28 people were reported wounded. Unfortunately, the city of Kharkiv is also suffering from the shelling, and particularly the central part of the city. And this includes residential area and also a recreation area such as a cinema that was heavily damaged over the weekend, and also some, you know, cultural facilities around it. I had a chance to talk to civilians who live in the Kharkiv region. They say that over the night, they experienced really heavy shelling.
Russia's advances in this region is really forcing Ukraine to send in reinforcements and stretching its troops along the front line in the east and south.
Yes, a lot of experts believe that this is the main reason for Russian forces to start this new offensive in the Kharkiv region, that the main aim is just to get forces that could strengthen Donetsk region from there and to move them to the Kharkiv region, because, of course, Ukrainian forces experience quite big deficit of manpower, especially in comparison to Russian forces.
Right, and since Russia launched this new offensive, there are obviously, as we've been talking about, fears about it coming very close to Kharkiv, Ukraine's second largest city. My understanding is over the weekend, a divisive mobilization law in Ukraine came into force. What can you tell us about it? And has there been any signs of anything changing or reaction?
So the new mobilization law is now in action, and Ukrainian men have 2 months now, 60 days to be more precise, to update their personal information in the military facilities or through the new online applications that was also launched over the weekend. So now, according to the data available on Monday, more than 300,000 men have already updated their personal information through this online service. And basically, Ukrainian military authorities now have all the information they need in order to proceed further with mobilization actions. Again, experts believe, and a lot of people inside of Ukraine believe, that this will help to bring more people into the army. However, there are a lot of concern in terms of the organization of the process, and a lot of people also require and ask the authorities to not just provide this online service, and because it's really the service that can help to make the process easier, but also to provide more and better training for people that will take into consideration consideration people's skills, and this also should help to encourage and to improve the mobilization action here inside of the country.
But Anna, it does sound like Ukrainian forces were reportedly able to have some battle successes. Ukrainian forces reportedly have attacked oil refineries and destroyed a couple of Russian boats?
Yeah, actually, if we're into some positive news for Ukrainian side, Ukrainian forces had certain success in launching the attacks on the oil refineries across Russia in different areas. At least, again, this is according to the information from Russian authorities and Russian social media. But Ukrainian forces and Ukrainian authorities did not confirm that incidents and did not take responsibility, as usually happens. But we have information and we have confirmation of attacks on the oil refineries and the destruction of at least one boat, reportedly could be two boats. But again, more information and more details will come soon, because at this point it is still being verified.
Anna Chernikova reporting for us from Kyiv. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Laurie.
As Ukraine faces one of its toughest moments against a massive assault by Russia, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, in opening remarks at a virtual meeting of the Ukraine Defense Contact Group, committed on Monday to keeping U.S. weapons moving.
We'll continue to approve substantial security assistance packages for Ukraine. And you'll see a steady flow of U.S. assistance to Ukraine week after week.
Austin and as many as 50 defense leaders from Europe and around the world were meeting to coordinate more military aid to Ukraine.
We're meeting at a moment of challenge. Putin's invaders have launched another offensive onto sovereign Ukraine territory. And the Kremlin's forces will try to make further advances in the weeks ahead and try to carve out a buffer zone along the Ukrainian border. This is a hard and dangerous fight.
And as Russia ramps up its offensive in eastern Ukraine, officials with the U.S. command in eastern Europe say it's urgent for NATO to be ready for possible confrontation. VOA's Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gongadze talked to U.S. and Polish commanders during a U.S. Army Transfer Authority ceremony in Bolesławiec, Poland.
10,000 U.S. troops are on rotation in Poland, a NATO front line. The 1st Cavalry Division of the U.S. Army assumed control from the 3rd Infantry Division for the Eastern European mission. The U.S. military is working closely with NATO allies to strengthen deterrence. In 2020, it reactivated its V-Corps, enhancing command and control for U.S. allied and partner forces in Europe. Lieutenant General Charles Costanza, the commanding general of V-Corps, who recently assumed leadership of the corps, says Russia represents a near-term threat to NATO.
I think that there's a little bit of a misperception that we have time and that Russia's taken a lot of losses and it's going to take them a while to rebuild and reconstitute. I don't have that view. And I think we need to be ready in the near term.
Ukrainian officials and Western open source intelligence reports say Russia's losses in Ukraine have been heavy, with nearly 50,000 troops killed in action. But Costanza says Russia forces are swiftly rebuilding themselves, and while they are not as well trained as NATO troops, they have grown in size since the start of their full-scale invasion.
They've also modernized, learning the lessons from fighting in Ukraine, which is going to be a problem for us in the West, because Ukraine's using Western equipment. They are using Western techniques. Russia's learning how to defeat that.
He sees a real sense of urgency for NATO to be ready. The Polish partners concur and express their welcome to U.S. troops. Poland has always seen Russia as a threat, but Brigadier General Fajkowski, commander of the Polish Army's 11th Armored Cavalry Division, says all NATO allies now recognize the severity of that threat.
Now, when Russia invaded Ukraine, all masks are out. So now we know everything. Russian shows how they think, how they operate, and everything now is clear.
He stresses how important it is for Poland to have U.S. troops stationed on its territory as a deterrent.
Have to be ready to show the Russians that, look, we are prepared. There is no way to invite us. If you invite even the smallest country like Latvia or Estonia, we are ready to face the threat.
Polish military officials stress that throughout history and due to its geographic location in the heart of Europe, their country has often had to fight first. One reason, it currently spends almost 4% of its GDP on defense. The memories of Nazi occupation in World War II and Soviet domination in the period after taught Poland some painful lessons. Providing support for Ukraine now and helping train Ukrainian soldiers are signs that Poland is choosing to apply the lessons of the past wars to avoid suffering new ones. Mirosława Gongadze, VOA News, Bolesławiec, Poland.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. Russian President Vladimir Putin wrapped up a two-day trip to China on Friday, where he and Chinese President Xi Jinping reaffirmed their strategic relationship. In an interview with the Associated Press, Taiwan's outgoing Foreign Minister Joseph Wu said the alliance highlights the threats to the self-ruled democracy which China claims as its own territory.
Putin's visit to Beijing is an example of the two big authoritarian countries supporting each other, working together with each other, supporting each other's expansionism. Putin's war in Europe or against Ukraine is something that we have been watching very closely for more than 2 years. And that kind of expansionism has caused the international community a lot.
Joining us now is Russia expert with the Institute for the Study of War, Nicole Wolkov. Thank you for being with us. So why was Putin's trip to Beijing so significant and what's the motivation?
China has been increasingly providing Russia with dual-use goods. We've seen that from media reports as well as U.S. officials stating it. You know, these dual-use goods are things like microelectronics and machine tools that Russia can specifically use for its arms production and its defense industrial base. And Putin has routinely supported China's peace plan, and he may be hoping to generate more support for the Chinese peace plan as it does have more favorable conditions for Russia than other plans, you know, proposed by other countries and Ukraine. But Putin likely seeks to deepen China's support for the war and the Russian defense industrial base.
The plan was rejected for failing to call for Russia to leave occupied parts of Ukraine. Ukraine says it will never agree to that. What else is Putin getting by the support that he's getting from Xi Jinping?
We've seen Putin attempt to cooperate and deepen relations with China as well as with North Korea and Iran. And so I think that this visit may also be part of continuing efforts to deepen relations with those three countries through different multilateral organizations, such as the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. I definitely think that there is that materiel support with dual-use goods that Russia can use China to help it evade sanctions, for sure.
And so what about Russia's new offensive in Ukraine, particularly in the last week? It appears that the war has reached a critical stage. Ukraine's military has been depleted of weapons and manpower, waiting for missiles and artillery from the United States after months and months of delay. How much has this set back the war for Ukraine?
ISW does not assess specific Ukrainian capabilities and intent, but I will say that if significant amounts of Western aid arrive in a timely fashion, this will likely allow Ukrainian forces to stabilize the front line in the coming months and repel Russian offensive operations that are expected and possibly allow Ukraine to begin counteroffensive operations in late this year or early 2025.
Where do you see the war right at this moment?
Definitely the Russian offensive operations in Kharkiv Oblast, like along the international border. Russia is trying to have the strategic objective of drawing and fixing Ukrainian forces there to then enable other Russian tactical advances in eastern Ukraine. So Russians are trying to exploit this to intensify gains in other areas, especially during this window where Ukrainian forces are waiting to receive U.S. and other Western aid and waiting for that aid to reach the front line at scale. So this fixing operation, Russians are trying to exploit during this limited time.
But you do think that Ukraine can regain and stabilize their position once the aid arrives?
If the Western military aid arrives timely and at scale.
What's time? timely? How soon does it really need to get there to make an impact?
Within the coming months, I think, is the best answer I can give.
What are you focused on right now as far as your analysis for what's happening with Russia in Ukraine and beyond?
We're focused currently on what we've always been focused on, the tactical operational situation on the front line in Ukraine. And I think that we're watching the operations in northern Kharkiv Oblast amid the expectation of the upcoming Russian offensive.
How significant would it be if Russia were able to get into actually the city of Kharkiv?
Currently, Russians appear to be prioritizing creating a buffer zone over this deep penetration. And so Russians have destroyed several bridges around Vovchon. So all of these things suggest that Russia currently is not prioritizing actually a deeper advance.
So what do you think their main goal is at this point in that region?
In this region, I think the main goal is to draw and fix Ukrainian forces and resources, as well as to prioritize creating this buffer zone along the international border. I think that Russians are interested in creating a larger staging zone to conduct airstrikes against Kharkiv City and other regions in Ukraine.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your taking the time.
Yes, thank you so much.
Nicole Wolkov, Russia expert with the Institute for the Study of War. Almost 500,000 Ukrainian immigrants have moved to the U.S. since the start of Russia's invasion, according to the Department of Homeland Security. Two of the biggest challenges they face are finding health care and a job. In one small Colorado city, a local clinic owner, herself a Ukrainian immigrant, is helping as much as she can. Svetlana Pristinska has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Liana Marienko came to Denver, Colorado, in the fall of 2022. In her native town of Vinnytsia, she was working in diagnostics medicine. In Colorado, Marienko found a similar job from the owner of a local clinic. Marienko says they discussed the topic, how she could continue her studies in the U.S., how she could authenticate her Ukrainian diploma for American standards. One morning, she called Marienko and said she knew Marienko had a medical degree and that there was a job for her at the clinic. That she is Eli Titarenko, who came to the U.S. from Ukraine over 2 decades ago. Titarenko says it was really important for her to help people who only just came to the U.S. from Ukraine, who may not be able to speak English very fluently yet. In 2021, Alena, or Eli Titarenko, opened Arvada West Family Medicine Clinic in Arvada, Colorado, northwest of Denver. Every month, the clinic sees some 500 patients. About 80% of them are Ukrainian. Anna Parsaeva and Hanna Leskiv are recent Ukrainian refugees. Parsaeva says when she arrived, she had problems with insurance and a language barrier. But she added, Ellie helped a lot and told her what to do. Leskiv says she had problems with blood pressure in Ukraine, and Alena helped her normalize that, and then she got her medicine. Many Ukrainians in need of psychological help in their native language also come to the clinic, says nurse Halina Kandyuk. Kandyuk says many of the patients are from Ukraine's east, the Donetsk, Kharkiv, Lugansk regions. It is very difficult when these patients come, she says, because they all come with trauma. Titarenko says dealing with the trauma victims is difficult. It breaks her heart, she says, that war alters human psychology to the point where they stop valuing what should be most precious, their life. She says in the last 2 years, they've seen so many patients with suicidal thoughts. Titarenko says most patients don't speak English, and to determine their psychological state, tests and surveys are translated into Ukrainian. They teach patients how to live one day at a time, she says, because worrying about the future brings anxiety, and worrying about the past often leads to depression. Today, 7 out of 10 staff at the clinic are Ukrainians, and many more are interning at the clinic. If you have received medical education, don't discard your diplomas, Titarenko says. She hopes everyone who has medical training will find a way to work in the U.S. In the future, Titarenko hopes to open another clinic in Colorado and employ more Ukrainian professionals there. for Svetlana Pristinskaya in Denver, Colorado. NRI's VOA News.
In Barentsburg, Norway, a coal mining town in the high Arctic, Ukrainian residents lived side by side with Russians. But since Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, Ukrainians have left the town after finding themselves in conflict with the Russian community. We hear more from Henry Wilkins reporting from Barentsburg.
A coal mining town in the high Arctic. Here, Russian flags and Soviet-era throwbacks are common, like this bust of Lenin overlooking the harbour. But Barentsburg is not in Russia. It's in Norway. Barentsburg is situated in the Norwegian archipelago of Svalbard, more than 600 kilometres north of Norway's mainland. Because of the island grouping's unusual legal status, people from any nationality can settle here. Russians and Ukrainians historically made up most of Barentsburg's approximately 400 residents, but that changed in 2022 when many Ukrainians left. Katerina Shabratska is a Ukrainian who left Barentsburg before 2022, the year of Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. She now lives in Longyearbyen, the major Norwegian settlement on Svalbard. Many Ukrainians moved to Longyearbyen from Barentsburg after the start of the full-scale war.
2022 changed everything. They didn't want to spend time there anymore.
Yes.
Because it was a lot of bomb for 2022.
Yes.
Yeah, and I feel it, and I knew it, so I also was like, what the really to talk with the Russian people anymore.
Okay. Shabratska says tensions in Barentsburg started before 2022, and some Russians and Ukrainians had moved the year before.
They moved 2021 because there was a not so nice situation with Navalny.
Russian opposition politician and anti-corruption activist Alexei Navalny returned to Moscow from exile in 2021 and was immediately arrested. He died in February at a remote Arctic penal colony. Locals say many in Barentsburg were vocal supporters of Navalny, while others were supporters of Putin, causing tensions to rise. Members of the Russian community in Longyearbyen told VOA they are now afraid to talk about the situation as they still have family in Russia. The Russian special consul in Barentsburg declined a request for an interview. Norwegian locals say relations between the Norwegian and Russian settlements on the island were historically good, even during the Cold War. But that changed in 2022, when shared cultural events were stopped and business ties between Barentsburg and Longyearbyen were severed.
Maybe because during the Cold War, it wasn't like a full-scale war with killings all over. Maybe that is part of it. What we see in Europe now is not what we saw through the Cold War, right? This is a full-scale bombing nightmare, which have really affected people here as well.
Katerina Shabratska says she and the rest of the community of 40 or so Ukrainians in Longyearbyen do what they can to raise money for the war effort back home.
Here we did dinners here, we did big concerts here, we did lunches here. That's how we work together.
Nearly a century ago, the Svalbard Treaty established Norway's sovereignty over these Arctic islands, made them open for all to live here visa-free, and prohibited military activity. There have been no open hostilities between members of the Russian and Ukrainian populations. But the war in Ukraine has created tensions, in some ways, resembling a Cold War here. And a new Iron Curtain has fallen between two communities that call Svalbard home. Henry Wilkins, VOA News, Barentsburg, Norway.
Ukrainians found something to cheer about over the weekend as one of their own became the undisputed heavyweight boxing champion. Ukrainian boxer Oleksandr Usyk downed English boxer Tyson Fury by split decision early Sunday morning in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Usyk took time after that fight to express support for his country.
I want to say, Jesus, thank you, because for me and my country, it's big opportunity.
And despite his loss, Fury offered a cordial response.
You know, he's a good fighter, Alexander, and I was catching him and he was catching me, and it was a good fight, so hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did.
The rematch between the two boxers is set for October 12th. And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on social media, be sure and follow VOA News. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Lori London.